Hello, everyone. I'm Mark Squires. Thanks for tuning in today for episode 5 in our second season of FinPoint. Welcome back. Or if this is your first FinPoint, we're so glad you've joined us. This season of FinPoint, we introduce and examine the growth engines. To recap, the growth engines are 4 strategies to help firm leaders and advisors tap into the advice value stack in order to deliver value and to grow your client base and business. In short, the growth engines represent how firms can actively deliver exactly what investors want. In the first episode of the season, Mike Durbin, president of Fidelity Institutional, joined us to introduce the 4 growth engines, which, as a reminder, include sustainability quotient, digital quotient, intelligence quotient, and lastly, emotional quotient. Last time, we focused on intelligence quotient, or IQ, and more specifically, how firms can act as information curators, providing clients with access to niche services and advice to ultimately deliver great value. Today, we're moving on to emotional quotient, or EQ, our final growth engine. EQ is similar to emotional intelligence. It's put into practice through interpersonal skills, including an advisor's ability to understand a client's personal needs and priorities. EQ is seen when an advisor engages in active listening, where they really take notice of the cues to their client's feelings and concerns, and then they acknowledge those feelings, offering empathy and emotional support. Advisors with high EQ seek to understand clients across multiple areas of their life, not just in their finances. They are highly service-oriented and often bring in principles of behavioral economics and life coaching into their practices. Right now, as we navigate the COVID-19 pandemic, EQ can be seen in the way we engage with clients and their families who are navigating this new normal. They're asking questions, listening to their thoughts and feelings, and conveying empathy. We also see EQ in the advice and solutions we offer to those clients with small businesses as they navigate these uncharted waters. What EQ really comes down to is a firm's ability to demonstrate genuine value during the moments that matter most in a client's life. EQ is a critical component of reaching the higher levels of the advice value stack. While EQ is often reflected in a firm's culture and values, it can also come out in elements of client relationships. For instance, ESG investing is an approach that can help advisors identify the issues that clients care most about. It can be not just an investment solution, but also a way to empower clients and help them work toward their life's purpose and the legacy they hope to leave behind. Today, we're going to drill down into ESG investing and how it connects to EQ. But first, let me introduce my colleague, Nicole Connolly. Nicole is head of ESG investing here at Fidelity. She also manages the Fidelity Women's Leadership Fund. Nicole, welcome. It's so great to have you here.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here. And I think this is a topic that just has so much resonance today.
It certainly does. It comes up in almost every meeting that we're in. So, Nicole, you just heard me introduce the idea of EQ, and now we're bringing ESG into the mix. Maybe you could help us set the stage. Start perhaps by getting us beyond the acronyms, the alphabet soup here. So what exactly do we mean by ESG investing?
Right. So ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance. So let's unpack those letters. What does that mean? So when we look at companies through an ESG lens, we're looking for companies that are limiting their impact on the environment. They are trying to do right by their customers, their employees, the communities they operate, and their suppliers. That's the essence of the S, or social. And they're looking for companies that have diverse and independent boards of directors. They have management teams who are prudently, you know, navigating the business. And that's kind of what the good governance, or the G, looks like. And you might ask, like, what does all of that have to do with each other? What does the E and the S and the G have to do with each other? And really, it's a framework with which you can consider how your companies are engaging with all of their stakeholders, whether it be their employees, the communities, the environment, their suppliers. And really, the way I think about ESG investing is it's a way to align your capital with your values or things that you care about. And it's ultimately an approach to invest with purpose. And I think that's kind of where the EQ starts to come in. When investors can align their capital with their values, they can start to reflect their personal motivations and their financial decision-making and really back the change that they want to see in the world. And this can help drive a higher level of engagement and strengthen that bond between investor and advisor.
So it seems like that alignment of values and decision-making perhaps makes all the difference. And when you think about those values, it makes me wonder, what separates ESG from similar approaches, including socially responsible investing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So socially responsible investing has been around for decades. And some say that it kind of got its roots in the 70s, especially with faith-based organizations who were looking to avoid investing in companies or sectors that conflicted with their morals. So not investing in alcohol or tobacco or guns. And that's where this idea of exclusionary investing came from. And so exclusionary investing, it's one way that you could approach ESG. But what I'm personally more excited about is this idea of investing in companies who have embraced those ESG principles that I just talked about.
It sort of begs the question, can an ESG approach to investing actually do both for investors? Focus on factors most likely to impact performance and potentially also reduce risk?
Yeah, so ESG is really an extra layer of due diligence. And I think what's so interesting about this way of investing is that when you focus on these ESG factors, you sometimes identify opportunities and risks that aren't observable through traditional financial analysis. And so that's one of the things that makes it so interesting is that you have this element of being able to invest with purpose and alongside your values. And I think that combination is why we're seeing, or one of the reasons why we're seeing ESG demand really surge.
And of course, it's been on the rise in Europe for the last few years, but it's almost become mainstream here in the U.S. in more recent times.
Yeah, so we are seeing a lot of momentum in the U.S., and the data certainly bears that out. In 2019, we saw about $21 billion of flows in the U.S. into ESG funds. That's nearly four times as much as we saw in 2018. And then this year, we're on track already to have seen $30 billion of flows into ESG funds, really setting records again in 2020 with ESG flows.
So, Nicole, why do you think ESG funds have just vaulted? And those are some powerful statistics you just shared. And I'd be remiss in not asking, how has the pandemic affected all this?
Yeah, so I think it comes back to this idea of EQ, and the pandemic has really put the S, or the social, front and center, whether that's how we ourselves think about our own health and well-being, or how companies are prioritizing the health and well-being of their employees and their customers. And then even beyond the pandemic, you know, we've obviously have massive racial tensions across the country. So that's moved, you know, diversity and equality front and center in the minds of consumers and investors. So I think it has investors thinking about, how am I invested? What am I invested in? How are those companies responding to these different crises? And I think, you know, investors are starting to think about the way companies participate in society can ultimately decide whether they succeed or fail over the long term. The bottom line about ESG is really meeting clients where they are. And so even before the pandemic, when we did a survey of our retail investors in January here at Fidelity, we surveyed about 2,000 retail investors, and we found that 77% of investors under 40 wanted to invest with impact or with an ESG lens, and about 74% of women were interested in investing this way. And the reason that matters is because those are the types of investors that are going to make up a massive chunk of household wealth over the coming decades. So we really need to start talking to these investors about things that they care about and be in the market with products that they're interested in.
And it, you know, it seems like the summary is that ESG may be a way for wealth managers to extend the tent to include many more types of investors. You noted millennials and women, further right. engagement.
Right. So for the advisors listening, I mean, I think ESG is a way to have a more meaningful conversation with your clients, maybe even bring more members of the household into the conversation, and really maybe attract a different kind of investor into your practice. Really, you know, bring the EQ to life here.
And speaking of bringing EQ to life, that's a great transition to bring in our next two guests. Both have finely tuned ideas about ESG and EQ and some practical experiences to share with us. But Nicole, thanks so much for your time and your insights today.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, for having me. Take care.
I would like to welcome Mordecai Fishman, Managing Director of JSF Financial, and Jay Littman, Co-Founder and President of Ethic, a tech-driven sustainable asset manager. Great to have you here, Jay and Mordecai.
Thank you for having us. Glad to participate.
Thank you. Pleasure.
So Mordecai, if I may, let me start with you. When you have high EQ as a financial advisor, you're looking to build trust with clients, truly listening to who they are and, importantly, what they value. The big definition of that, where you know you are hitting the nail right on the head, is when you're discussing how investors align their values with their financial lives. Can I ask you to talk to us about how you've seen this play out?
Mark, financial planning and being an advisor is all about the human element. Most people don't wake up and decide that they want to bloodlessly allocate their capital to efficiently maximize their returns. Most people wake up and have dreams, aspirations, things that they want to accomplish with their family, with their friends, and with their community. As an advisor, the pleasure and the privilege that we have collaborating with people is helping them realize those dreams and those goals. And in particular, in our estimation, being skilled and competent as an advisor not only involves obviously the IQ you have to know about capital allocation and investing, but at the same time, you have to have a deep emotional understanding of your clients, who they are, and how that will play out in terms of their investment thesis. When we talk about ESG or values-driven investing, that is a story that resonates with them tremendously. We here at JSF Financial truly believe that by allocating capital in a sustainable, intelligent fashion, not only are we going ahead and helping our clients express both their and our firm's values into the world and improve really the everything for all of us, at the same time, we actually think that long-term, that is a investment thesis that by definition will outperform. And the values conversation is one that has tremendously worked for us and is resonated with our clients.
Very interesting angles. Jay, give us some perspective if you would.
Of course. I mean, we have seen a lot of advisors fortunately recognizing that this is about engagement and this is about helping clients to understand more about what their portfolio can represent to them. And so by being able to define their values and then align their portfolio with their values, you actually enable the advisor to more deeply engage with each member of the family as well. And so as advisors continue to recognize and increasingly recognize that wealth will transfer to the next generation eventually, there needs to be a proactive mechanism by which you can engage with each member of the family around something other than simply the numbers. Right. So this becomes that consistent, powerful mechanism to engage with them beyond the numbers, as it allows the advisor to reach out to every member of the family and to have a conversation about what that individual in the family actually wants to talk about. And so as we look at what values aligned investing can become in the future, it becomes the bedrock of each of these conversations and of each of these relationships, such that the relationship with each family member is so strong that there is dramatically less risk of them leaving upon that transfer.
Mark, if I can follow up on what Jay said, having the conversation with our clients and turning it into a family values transmittal and educational tool, we have found to be tremendously productive. For whatever reason, money is the last great taboo in our society. Very oftentimes, even wonderful, warm, loving parents and grandparents that have open lines of communication with their children sometimes find it difficult to start having a conversation around their wealth. But if the conversation begins to be positioned as to, hey, these are the values that we hold dear, these are the actual things that we think are important. And by the way, to those like us that have these assets, it's tremendously important to make these decisions as to how we allocate it. We here have seen it become such a positive, allowing grandparents and parents to have this multi-generational dialogue and open up a path to educating their children and grandchildren as to the responsibilities, as well as the things that they need to be thinking about when it comes to investments and wealth preservation.
So let me unpack this if I can a little bit. ESG, it seems to me, can help you extend your relationships into the family and their network. And what a great opportunity that is for growth. As I think about that, I'm wondering, can ESG play a role in differentiating a firm, helping to separate it from its competitors? I'm thinking, yes. Jay, share your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, as we look at what it is that a client's actually coming to their advisor for, right? Because, you know, 20 years ago or so, it was the investment allocation, right? That was the secret sauce. 10 years ago, it may have been the planning, right? But as those things become increasingly commoditized, what we feel is though values alignment, talking to the client around what they believe, talking to the client around what they actually care about in their everyday lives, that allows the advisor to rise up the value stack. And so with the commoditization of these other features, values becomes that uncommoditizable dynamic in a relationship, because ultimately the client is coming to an advisor for that advisor. The advisor becomes the product. The relationship is the product. And values are ultimately what drives every relationship. And so as we look at growth, being able to consistently and scalably rise up the value stack to provide peace of mind and fulfillment with each client relationship, not just the few, allows the advisor to deepen those relationships with every existing client, but also offer something truly differentiated to an entirely new market of clients that want to have this conversation, but can't necessarily have it with their existing advisor that doesn't want to have the conversation around values.
So Jay, let's take this to the advisor level. How can an advisor get into the driver's seat to have this conversation? It's complicated. How can they compel people to talk about their values?
Well, Mordecai is a fantastic example of being able to have this conversation and recognizing when to have it with the right clients. But we talk about, in our business, tells, right? When do you know if a client is actually a fit for this conversation? Because fundamentally, we believe that everyone has values. When you're prescribing a specific methodology, that methodology may not fit with the client. But at the end of the day, every individual you sit with has a value set. So if you can align with an element of that value set, you can connect with that individual around that. And so the tells are the signal to tell you about what you can connect to them around. Like, let's say that they love organic food, they love being outdoors, they love being healthy, right? Well, maybe it's health and fitness, right? Maybe it's health and wellness, right? Maybe they're on the school board, right? Maybe they are on the PTA. Maybe they have seven children and they love providing those children with the opportunity to learn. Well, then maybe education is a function of what they may want to prioritize in their value set. Or, you know, maybe they simply just have a house on the beach and they love scuba diving. And so ocean preservation may be something that they want to prioritize in their thinking and in their portfolio. But each of these things about the way that the client lives their lives are an opportunity to connect with that client around something beyond the numbers and beyond the charts and graphs.
Mordecai, what do you think? How can an advisor work to build up that EQ even beyond ESG?
I think that my friend Jay is preaching truth. The relationships that advisors have with the clients that are successful are going to, by definition, be grounded in authenticity and connection. Your clients are going to know if you're just trying to peddle or sell them a product. But when you truly comprehend what values are important, what motivates your friends and clients in order to live the lives that they're trying to build, then you as the advisor can collaborate with them and come up with not just values, but proposals and actual ways to implement actionable items for them to allocate capital that will both make them feel good about what they're doing and at the same time will help them succeed and achieve their financial goals.
So I think I'm getting a clear picture on this, but tell me this. We place EQ near the top of the advice value stack. How important is EQ to what you do as an advisor?
This is from my subjective front-end view. It's the single most important skill for any advisor to have. And quite frankly, if you're not a people person, then probably being a financial advisor should not be the career or the business for you. We like to say in our office that money is boring. People are interesting. To a great extent, the financial universe, as Jay said, has become entirely commoditized. The magic is always going to be in the distance, in the liminal space between the theory and the practice, between what the financial marketplace is offering people and how they're actually going to make decisions in their day-to-day lives. I would make the argument that EQ is the single most important thing for a registered investment advisory firm to cultivate, to train, and to stress for success.
That's powerful, Mordecai. Thank you for that. And Jay, thank you for bringing in your perspectives as well. In 2020, as the world becomes especially focused on personal connection and what really matters, that notion of walking a mile in someone else's shoes is likely going to resonate with a lot of our listeners. Gentlemen, thanks so much. What a great conversation.
Thank you. Stay safe and healthy.
Thanks for having us.
And that's it for episode 5 and the final episode diving deep into a growth engine. But we're not done yet. In our final episode, we'll conclude season 2 by inviting Mike Durbin, president of Fidelity Institutional, back with us to talk about how the growth engines all work together to focus your firm on growth. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Mark Squires.
FinPoint is a production of Fidelity Investments. Any reproduction, transcription, or rebroadcasts of this content are forbidden without explicit permission. Information provided in this program is for informational and educational purposes only. To the extent any information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity, and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for you or your client's investment decisions. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products and or services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation, directly or indirectly, in connection with the management, distribution, and or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. Views expressed are of the date of the recording, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the speakers, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of this information. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. The third-party providers mentioned herein are neither affiliated with nor an agent of Fidelity, and are not authorized to make representations on behalf of Fidelity. Their input herein does not suggest a recommendation or an endorsement by Fidelity. This information was provided by third-party providers and is subject to change. The content provided and maintained by any third-party website is not owned or controlled by Fidelity. Fidelity takes no responsibility whatsoever, nor in any way endorses such content. There is no form of legal partnership, agency affiliation, or similar relationship among an investment professional, the third-party service providers, and Fidelity Investments, nor is such relationship created or implied by the information herein. Third-party trademarks and service marks are property of their respective owners. All other trademarks and service marks are property of FMR LLC or its affiliated companies. Fidelity Institutional provides investment products through Fidelity Distributors Company LLC, clearing custody or other brokerage services through National Financial Services LLC, or Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, members NYSE SIPC. Copyright 2020 FMR LLC, all rights reserved. Reference number 10128271.1.0.